more. Baby, it's not nice. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven in the middle of it. Grass make the heaven in the middle. We are grass make the heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got a lot to cover this week. Coming up first is an interview that Alex Jones had with G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, and he has insights that few people really have, and he's been studying this struggle, this culture war struggle for about 40 years, so he knows quite a bit of what's going on. But anyway, this is an excellent interview that Alex had with G. Edward Griffin. Here we go now.
G. Edward Griffin, who does not need any introduction, best-selling author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, but a major filmmaker going back to the 1960s. If you want to know the reason we have a leg up on the globalists today and are exposing their whole system, it's because of G. Edward Griffin. So a living legend, redpillexpo.org, redpilluniversity.org. He joins us now to talk about where we are today. G. Edward, great to have you with us. What would you call this time and space we're in right now in late June 2020?
Wow. What would I call this time and space other than crazy, which is easy? I think it's the right way to describe it is the fulfillment of a long-range plan coming to fruition before our eyes. It should be a really no surprise or shock to anybody that understands what's gone on before. Of course, that's the problem. Our media has made it very, very clear that you're not going to learn anything about history. I mean, real history. So this does come as a shock to most people. But you ask me my opinion, I see it as finally coming to fruition what has been planned for decades in the past and slowly building. Now, that needs explanation, of course. So what is the plan? Who laid the plan? What's the goal and all that? But while a lot of people are saying, gosh, what's going on? I know exactly what's going on because I read about it 50 or 60 years ago in the communist literature. I used to hang out in a communist bookstore in Los Angeles, not as a comrade, but because I was interested in what those guys were up to. So they tried to recruit me and all that. But meanwhile, I was down there buying all their books and their pamphlets and talking to the comrades and even attended a couple of their study courses. And so I got to be a theoretician, you might say, a communist theoretician, somewhat against my will. But it became clearer to me way back in, you mentioned the date, 1969, when I did that presentation. The whole strategy was in front of us. In fact, I took most of it from pamphlets and books that were written in 1920. 1920 was all clear. And before that, I just got into it late. So what we're seeing today is the fulfillment of a long-range strategy laid down by people that we tend to call communists. They call themselves Marxist-Leninists, that's their favorite phrase. They're revolutionaries. They're soldiers. They're conquerors. They want their would-be conquerors. They want to control the world. And they're not a lot different, really, from what we call the deep state. Because in all of these things, there are always two sides. You know, it's beginning to become clear now to people that there's controlled opposition. You know, if you own both baseball teams, you don't really care which one wins. All the profits go to you anyway. So there's been this idea of you've got to have, if you want to move society, you've got to have conflict. If you've got to have conflict, you've got to have two sides. Well, you don't want to let one side get out of control, so you control both sides. You create both sides.
But then over time, they're maneuvering us towards the Marxist-Leninist system that then the globalists, the ruling class, are exempt from, just as China is the model. All these billionaires, all this offshore money, but the people are slaves. And I know you're an expert on explaining that dialectic. Carol Quigley exposed that from the enemy side. But a few minutes before we go to break here, you never talk about yourself, G. Edward Griffin. You have been fighting this tyranny since, what, the mid-60s? I mean, talk about yourself a few minutes. Where you grew up, what formed you, what got you into this fight? Because I've been doing this 26 years. You've been doing this, you know, 50, 60 years, and we salute you.
Well, thank you. Well, I don't know about growing up. I don't think I quite made that that goal yet. But, yeah, the first light bulb went on in 1960. I remember it very well. It was a little simple pamphlet I picked up, and I read it. It was critical of the United Nations, of all things. And I just come out of the university, and I had learned very clearly that the UN was our last best hope for peace. And I read this critical thing, and I thought, wow, this can't be true. Well, that was the beginning. I checked it out, and I found out it was true. So that's how long I've been involved. Now, I wasn't a fighter in the beginning. For the first couple of years, I was more or less a student. I was absorbing as much information as I could. That's what I mentioned. I used to go down to the communist bookstore and see what they were up to. I became really a fighter about 1963. At least I call it a fighter. I was pushing back. I was trying to educate people. And I worked for a large insurance company at the time. I got so involved in this thing, my crusader gene started to vibrate. I quit my job, and I went off on my own pretty much. And my poor wife thought I was crazy, and I thought I was too. Give up a good job with a big insurance company.
But I think it's safe to say if you and others hadn't had that crusader gene, I think we would have lost by now.
Well, it's possible, but there were a lot of us that did. And you know, in those days, there was a lot of concern about communism, you know. And most of us were very sincere. And we were right, by the way. There was good reason to be concerned, even though later we were told by the authorities that communism is dead. I knew better. It just changed its name and its profile a little bit. But the reason I'm mentioning this is because back in those days, we were worried about communism, and we weren't tuned into the fact that words mean very little. Communism, socialism, fascism, Nazism, what is all this business? Left, right, liberal, conservative, blah, blah, blah. We get confused. We think that if you're a liberal, then the conservative is your opposite and so forth. And what we didn't realize that while we were all focused on the left and communism, we didn't realize that people in our own system, our own government, and in the Western world were adopting the same principles and the same ideology as communism, but they were using it under the banner of anti-communism. And they were anti-communist, but they weren't anti-collectivist. They were building the same system.
Exactly. So it was the same car making model, different coat of paint.
Yeah, they painted it differently and maybe changed the fender a little bit, and that's it. Yeah, good analogy.
All right, G. Edward Griffin is our guest. He's amazing. And our computer crashed earlier, not his fault, not my fault, not the crew's fault, but we do have that clip of him, 1969, that's gone so viral. It's up on band.video right now. I suggest you get it out there because he's not just pulling this out of the ether here. This is the real plan. Like General Parton, former head of Air Force Weapons Development, would always explain, Alex, it's communist. And if you know their program, you know how to stop the program. I'd be like, but they're globalists. He said, it doesn't matter. It's all different names. It's the same thing. It's a program. It's an operation. We'll be right back. All the most powerful rich people on earth, except for a few people like Donald Trump, are unified on bringing in world government and collectivism and telling you that white people are inherently bad and racist. But communist China with 3 million Muslims and death camps are good. These people are beyond hypocrites. They're giant frauds, and we've got to call them on it. Jim Griffin, you get into the history of collectivism, communism, the world model, but currently, you called this back in the 60s, made award-winning films, exposed communist overthrows, and films like Katanga. I mean, I'm a fan of all your films. Tell us what's coming in the future and what you think Trump should do and how we can oppose this right now.
Well, I don't know what's coming in the future because I don't know what all the forces are going to be. If we do nothing, when I say we, I mean those of us who are opposed to this particular theater that's going on, which is a typical classic communist revolution strategy.
Yeah, they're running the classic hardcore overthrow playbook. So I mean, you agree with me, though. This is the big move. They're definitely going for broke right now.
Oh, they're going for broke, yeah. They've always been going for broke, but we're getting right down now. You can see the finish line now. And so it depends on how successful we are in pushing back. If all we do is just say, look, and point with alarm and say, well, what are we going to do? And turn to to our leaders and say, well, aren't you going to save us? And we don't do anything except, well, maybe we'll have somebody to vote for. We think our whole obligation
is to
vote.
That's right. We can't complain about Trump when he's totally surrounded. So you're a general in this fight. You're like Obi-Wan Kenobi back to blow up the Death Star. What do we do, Ben Kenobi?
Oh, wow. I say, first of all, we have to build our army. We've got a lot of recruits to choose from, but nobody's thinking that they have to do anything. So we need to build a coalition. I think that's my single theme, that until we get people to work together and to realize that we as individuals have a responsibility to get organized and not just turn to our leaders and say, what are you going to do to protect us? We have to do something now at the grassroots level.
No, I totally agree with that, but so much of it is not laziness by our people. They're not arrogant, and they think, oh, I shouldn't speak up or lead a march. I shouldn't get involved. That's kind of me standing out and being a grandstander. No, that's you fighting for our very survival. People need to just get active. Conservatives always want to do it perfectly, too, and they want to overplan stuff. No, it's time to hit the damn streets.
Well, yeah, I think it's time to hit the damn streets, but I think we have to know what we're going to do in the streets. Now, if our object there is just to meet violence with violence, well, then we stepped right into the trap because that's what they used to do. They really want white and black killing each other. That's what they want, so that they can say at last, okay, we've let this go long enough. Now, children, we're going to put the clamps. Now it's martial law time, which is really what they want. That's
why they want to remove Trump because of a civil emergency and have a permanent martial law.
Yeah, that's why they're not doing anything to stop it now. They want it to escalate to the point where people will be begging for martial law. Can't you see the trick? You know, it's so obvious.
Well, that's it. The left says get rid of the police. They're not about to get rid of them. They're about to take them over and make them bigger.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a strategy, and once you understand it, it's very, very clear. But most Americans just don't have the idea that we're up against an army.
The strategy. What is your message to the police? Because we know on average they're good men and women. I think they need to not resign but be conscious of this is a larger takeover plan, and how do they respond to Strong Cities Initiative where the Democrats saying they want the UN to direct our police?
Well, we say, what's my advice to the police? Okay, to the police. Now, not to the police chiefs, but to the police. The police is most of you, because you want to do what is right. You want to protect society. You want to protect the innocent against the criminal. And it's time for you to organize and tell your police chief that embarrass him, do whatever you must do to publicize the fact that your police chief, who is ordering you to stand down and let these riots progress, that they better do something or you're going to put him in prison. Or, I mean, I don't know what they're supposed to do. Now, the police chiefs, some of them just don't have backbone, but many of them now are just they're puppets of the federal system. They get all the money from the federal government. They're afraid to stand out. They're afraid to say something for fear they'll be called racist. But a lot of them know exactly what they're doing. They've been working for decades to get their agents, these communist agents, into positions of authority like chiefs of police and mayors and governors, I might add. That's why all of a sudden we say, what's happened to our governors, to our mayors, to our police chiefs? Well, they were put there for this job, you see.
And that's right. A lot of preparation and time went into this. That's why they have it all lined up now.
They've gone on for decades. I mean, it was well advanced in 1969 when I made that presentation. It was far advanced, actually. It was halfway there. Now it's about 85% there.
But let's be clear, because I read the same writings you did after I was, you know, born, after you'd given that speech. They thought they'd take over by the 70s. They failed. So we've pushed them back before, but the societal rot is so great now that they think they finally got it, and I think they've got a chance if we don't take this very seriously.
Well, I agree with you, but that this word they, it has to be defined. You see, there, it's not just the people in the streets. It's not just the rioters and their leaders. It's not just Antifa and there's many organizations.
No, it's the big corporations that fund it and run the whole damn thing.
Yeah, it's where the money comes from, you see. But don't forget, it's the other side. They've got their agents in government. They're in Congress.
They've got all these Republicans that keep saying appease, appease, appease.
Yeah, some of them are not. I mean, they know what they're doing, you see. It's people don't understand that our enemy is a master at controlled opposition. They know there's going to be opposition, so they don't just wait for it. They put their people out there, then they lead the parade. And then at the last minute, they turn and you're defeated because your own leader.
Well, let's speak to that. No one ever accuses you of that because I'm flamboyant and out of control. Sometimes people go, oh, Jones must be controlled. No, they tried to put me in prison, buy me off. I'm real. And that's why they're trying to shut us down as well. So there, people need to understand too. They don't control all the opposition, but when you see something being promoted big time or the system defending it, you know it's controlled. How do you tell when somebody's controlled opposition versus the real McCoy?
Well, it takes a little time because you have to study their actions over a period of time because they're very good at it. I mean, I've never met a con artist I didn't like, you know, at first because they're very good at convincing you that they're sincere. I remember my grandmother, when television first came out, every time in the afternoon I'd go in the living room, she'd be there in front of the television watching professional wrestling. And, the guy would come out with the American flag as his cape, and his opponent would be a guy with a swastika on his arm, snarly and everything. Well, who are you going to root for? Of course, it's the Patriot, right? My grandmother would get so involved, and she'd say, look out behind you. You know, these guys were working for the same company, you know, and they're professional wrestlers. And, you know, they had the directive. They had to put on a good fight. Otherwise, people aren't going to come.
And you could see through it, but she couldn't. And I bet she'd get mad when you tried to warn her.
Oh, she didn't. No. Look, he's got this one sticker on his arm. See? Yeah, she didn't want to know because it was more fun the other way, you see. So politics is exactly the same way. And so if they don't put on a good fight, you know, and so you can't just tell by what they say. I mean, they all.
It's what they do.
Is it what they do? So that takes a little
time.
Well,
I want you to pass judgment. This is not prescripted on what you think of Alex Jones. Because most listeners know I'm for real. I make real mistakes. But I want to give us your view on InfoWars, your view on Trump, your view on organizations you think are good or bad. We really respect you, J. Edward Griffin. You're a very kind, smart, gentlemanly person who's not arrogant. We also need to respect the work you did. Because I've calculated the lines here. And if it wasn't for Barry Goldwater and J. Edward Griffin, you guys were before Ron Paul, and Ron Paul and many others, we would have already lost this fight, so we salute G. Edward Griffin. We're all very thankful for him. We would have already lost the game. Stay with us. G. Edward Griffin, one of the living legends. Back when he was fighting in the mid-60s, he was one of the top people fighting the globalists and the UN takeover. And he's just been fighting the whole time. He never went away. He's just been just as important. But what is it like, almost 60 years later, to see the full assault? And to see Marxist-Leninism being taught everywhere, to see racism and liberation theology being taught, to see mainstream news saying, plunge the dollar, end America, blow up Mount Rushmore, to see the CFR, you know, saying Wuhan virus is Trump's fault and all the fraudulent numbers there. What is your advice to President? Well, hey, what do you really think of Trump? Let's just take the gloves off what you really think. And then what do you think Trump should do if he is a good guy? And I think he is, but what should he do now? Because I think playing footsie with these guys isn't what the people want. I think he needs to go to war. I see some signs he's getting ready to do that. But what do you really think of President Trump, and what do you think he should do? G. Edward Griffin.
Well, of course, that's a hot wire. Any political figure, I think, has got, he does some good things and some bad things. And so it depends on, you know, which ones you want to look at. The only area of that topic I feel comfortable talking about is what I think should be done. All I can say is what I would do, I think, if I were president. God help us all if that were the case.
I understand you can't pass judgment on all the thousands of things he's dealing with, but gut level watching Trump, do you think he's a maverick from the outside that sucker punched him as part of the populist wave and he's trying his best, or do you think he's a triple agent?
Oh, I really don't know how to ask. The reason I'm hesitating on that is because I'm the world's supreme skeptic when it comes to politicians, even politicians I like, because I know this game we were talking about, you know, the controlled opposition. There are many ways of controlling opposition. And, threats are one thing, threat to one's family. Money is always a thing. Also, political popularity, do this or you won't get elected. All of those ways, those are all ways of controlling.
So even if he's not consciously bad, they've got psychological experts who know how to manipulate him.
Yeah, all of those things come into play.
So your point is, don't put your faith in Trump. You got to take action.
Yeah, that's why I'm skeptical. I always want to see how it turns out. I seldom listen to what any politician says because they always say they're playing to their audience, their support base, and they always say what they know their
supporters. No, I agree with you, but the establishment legitimately hates him.
Well, that's what makes him – one of the things that makes him so attractive to people like us is because the establishment hates him so much or appears to hate him. You see, we're back to that business of having controlled opposition. Remember the two wrestlers I'm talking about.
Edward, I agree with you, but I've been doing this not as long as you, but about a third as long, or a little longer. They legitimately convulse with hate, even at the high levels, and I've never had people come after me like this. All I know is, boy, if this is fake opposition to Trump, it hurts like hell.
Well, I agree with that. You know, one of the things is that, you know, in today, people don't support or vote for a political candidate. They vote against somebody. Most people say, well, I don't like him, but he's the lesser of two evils. And I really hate the other guy. And therefore, this is my choice. You see, the lesser of two evils. And so the worse your enemy appears to be, the better you look simply by not doing anything. So I'm not saying this is what Trump is doing. I'm just saying I have this great skeptical bone in my body.
Oh, no, I ask you because I respect it. I hear what you're saying. So let's go to what you can speak to. What should Trump do?
Yeah, this is the thing. I'm looking for results. And I think the current situation is a good example of that. Somebody came on at the news of the day and made some terrible statements about America. And, you know, they're going to bring the system down. If you don't do what we want, we're going to destroy the system. And Mr. Trump comes on and says, that's treason. That's sedition. And I say, hooray. Thanks for the words. What are you going to do about it now, Mr. Trump? See, there's a difference. You say, oh, we say the right things. But Mr. Trump, I'm sure, could find some legal basis for picking this guy up for treason and sedition or something, incitement to riot. There are plenty of things that people like his good friend George Soros are doing to fund the
exactly. He's like a paralyzed man, a quadriplegic. Brain's giving orders, but it's not happening.
You asked me what I thought, and my thought is I like what people say in many cases, but I look at what they do. And I'm always hearing, well, that they're paralyzed or they're surrounded by bad advice or something or other. There's always a good excuse, and probably most of it is valid. But I always look at what they do, and that's all I really want to talk about is what does a person do?
I agree. So what should he do? What should we do?
Well, I think in the current situation, we should not let these riots continue. I mean, this is not just Trump. These are the mayors, and these are the police chiefs, and these are the governors. I mean, it's all, don't forget, it's not just one man.
Oh, yeah, Trump, though, even said in a speech last week in Oklahoma, he said, well, I was going to go after him, but just let them burn themselves out and show how bad they are. Letting a crime be committed just because it shows the criminal's bad is aiding and abetting it.
Yeah, I agree. And it could be letting people see how bad it is part of the plan so that they'll beg for martial law. And Mr. Trump has said, well, I'm going to bring in martial law if I have to. Well, if he lets it go, he'll have to, you see. So what do you think about that? I don't know. I don't like it. That's all. So what should he do? I think he should do whatever he has within his power to put an end to these riots. And that means that doesn't necessarily mean go in and beat them on the street. It means pick up their leaders, for God's sake. We know who their leaders are.
And they're all committing huge crimes, selling guns out of backs of cars, dealing drugs. And they're just operating with impunity. Very easy to bust them.
Yeah, it's easy. And there are just a few of them. Somebody pays for those buses. Somebody's writing the checks for these guys. These are professionals out there. They may have motivation for ideology, but they're getting paid. We don't forget that fact. You take away the paycheck, and I think that whole movement would just disappear, say the truth. So why don't we go to the source, which is the organizers and the funders? Why don't we do that?
And by the way, Soros admits he financed the Ukrainian revolution that was a murderous thing that overthrew an elected government. He should be indicted for that. He should be extradited to Ukraine. He should be extradited to Hungary, Romania. Exactly. You cut the head off the snake with him, all the rats run. Why won't Trump do it?
I don't know.
That goes back to what you said. Why won't he do it?
That's the question. So that's my criticism right there. I want to see some action. I'm tired of hearing words.
What other action, G. Edward?
Well, let's turn to COVID. Mr. Trump is the topic. He says, this COVID thing is exaggerated, and he says all the things that you're talking about, and I am. And then he says, well, yeah, I'm ready to put the military out there. I'm happy to announce that we got the military ready to go force vaccines on everybody. What? How do you put those two things together? I don't know.
I agree. That really concerned me when he said that.
Yeah. So you go up and down the line, whether it's immigration or vaccines or riots in the street, the words are one thing, but the actions are another.
What do you make of Biden not able to talk and Pelosi and the rotting edifice? What's the point of that with the establishment? Why are they leaving these facades there when they've got other people behind the scenes?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there are several possible answers. Maybe they really don't intend to put up a good fight. Maybe they, for some reason, they want Mr. Trump to be in. That's a horrible thought, isn't it?
Or they've got a placeholder ready that they're going to insert once Biden gets in.
Yeah, there's several possibilities. But I think the maniac left is doing everything possible to look as bad as possible. They are driving people away. Now, surely they got the crazies up there and some of the brainwashed students that come out. There are plenty of supporters, but they're not winning over the American people with their actions. And they're not stupid. So why are they doing that? And there aren't many options really to choose from.
Well, I think they want to demoralize the country. That's why they say COVID's our fault and America's done. Jimmer Griffin is really laying it out today. RedPillExpo.org, RedPillUniversity.org.
This has been a culture war here of late. So they've taken a situation, okay, that occurred in Minneapolis of the killing, and they've made it into a really, really powerful political move. And this is a Venezuelan resident, a citizen, that talked about what happened in her country, and she was interviewed by David Knight. Here we go next.
Welcome back. What Simon Roche had to say, and again, they've been looking at this for 20 years, because for 20 years they've been targeted for extinction because of the color of their skin. You know, as Candace Owens said, racism is horrible unless it is targeted towards white people. And then, of course, they deserve it, right? She was not saying that they deserve it. That is what media is saying. That is the narrative. And, of course, we've seen this happen in South Africa first. And so they realized that they were targeted for extinction. And as you heard Simon say, they have organized at the local level. They knew the violence was coming for them. They organized along common grounds of defense. If you're going to be targeted because of the color of your skin, well, you organize because of the color of your skin. That's one of the things you organize on. But more importantly than that, they organized based on their Christian faith and upon their subordinates to Christ and Christian principles. And that's really what founded this country as well. We had the common phrase in American history, the revolutionaries, was no king but Christ. And then when we did have a king, it was not a human king. It was the law. Lex Rex. And in order to hold office, you had to swear allegiance to the law. That's why we have an oath to the Constitution today. And until the mid-20th century, you had to also be somebody who recognized that there was a higher authority that they would have to report to, because that helps to keep people in line. Now we're told you have to fear Christians, right? Be afraid of Christians. No. Be afraid of somebody. Not afraid of the people who know that they're going to answer to God. Be afraid of people who seek to make themselves God. That's what you should be afraid of. We got to stop looking to government as some kind of master that is going to protect us. Because when you view government as a benevolent dictator, guess what? It becomes a dictator, but it's not benevolent. And when you look to government, to the presidency, to everything as the be-all and end-all that's going to fix all your problems, it never happens. I've got a video clip here of a woman from Venezuela. She says, when the systems fall, so do the statues. This is a video that came from American Thinker. Let's play this video, and I've got some comments to make about it after we watch this video clip number 8.
Why do I even worry about some silly little statues coming down or some silly little street names changing? Why do I care? It's because the last time I didn't care about this, I was a teenager. I have already lived through this thing when I was living in Venezuela. Statues came down. Chavez didn't want that history displayed. And then he changed the street names. Then came the curriculum. Then some movies couldn't be shown on certain TV channels. And so on and so forth. You guys think it can't happen to you? I've heard this so many times. But always be on guard. Never believe something can't happen to you. You need to guard your country and your society or it will be destroyed. We didn't believe it could happen to us. Us Venezuelans, Cubans warned us. And we're like, Venezuela, we know what freedom is like. That's not going to happen here. Yet it happened. And there's clearly a lot of people wanting to destroy the U.S.
All right. That is Elizabeth Rogliani. Rogliani, yeah, I think is the way you pronounce her name. She is an actress from Venezuela, and she's seen this movie before. She knows what the script is about. She said they were pretty confident that, you know, they lived in a free country, and it's like, this is crazy. Who's going to buy this stuff, right? The Cubans, she said, warned us. And again, some of the most anti-communist people that I ever had the pleasure to know were Cubans growing up in Florida. Didn't have too many people from Eastern Europe, but they're real hardcore freedom lovers as well, as are the people in Hong Kong, as are the people in South Africa. Are we going to have to experience that before we learn it? I think so. I don't think we value it enough. It's such distant memory for us to see this. And we have an arrogance here in America. This is America. This can't happen. Well, it is happening right now, and you don't understand it. She said they began by telling people what they could watch on TV, what they could say. They took over the school system and the curriculum. That's happened a long time ago here in America. They've been working on that for generations. Two or three generations have been under this deconstruction of America curriculum that's been in the schools. So as you said, Hugo Chavez didn't want history displayed. He changed the street names. He changed the curriculum in schools. Movies couldn't be shown on certain TV channels and so on and so forth. He said, well, Cubans warned us. We said, we're Venezuelans. We know what freedom is like. This isn't going to happen here. Yet it did. When systems fall, so do statues, said Russia Beyond in 2012. It follows from this, as New American points out, that statues falls, the fall of statues, can portend your system falling. And that is exactly what is happening here, folks. There's a quote in the New American from G.K. Chesterton, who said, all conservatism is based on the idea that if you leave things alone, you leave them as they are. But you do not. If you leave a thing alone, you leave it to a torrent of change. That's why I use the analogy of a lawn that's overgrown or a farm that isn't planted or is overgrown. So you can't just leave something alone and expect it to self-organize. And he's right. That's why I don't call myself a conservative. I'm a libertarian. Because I don't want to leave the status quo the way it is. I want to return to something that was before the statist status quo that we currently exhibit. I'm not a Libertarian Party member anymore. They've become political hacks. I mean, they just invited and accepted John Bolton. It's like, well, okay, this guy, we know he wants war everywhere with everyone for no reasons whatsoever. But we don't have a problem with that. Are you kidding me? I guess that's why they purged the non-aggression principle the previous election. That was what the fight was about 4 years ago. The idea that you do not support the initiation of the use of force. You don't rule out the use of force defensively, but you will not support using it preemptively. But they got rid of that 4 years ago, and then here we are 4 years later, they're inviting John Bolton into the party. They've become a political party, which is to say they don't care about principle anymore whatsoever. And it's pathetic when you see people sell their souls and get so little in return. They didn't even get 30 pieces of silver. So when we look at G.K. Chesterton, the idea is, and this has been the problem, the left always has an agenda, and they're progressing in that agenda. The conservatives will say, okay, we'll accept where we are right now, but no further. They don't want to challenge the fundamental assumptions or the things that got us there. They don't want to roll anything back. Leave Obamacare there, but don't go any further. Well, Nancy Pelosi is moving Obamacare even further, as you expect. But the conservatives, quote unquote, didn't want to take it away. Yeah, it's kind of like the minimum wage, right? Okay, let's leave the minimum wage where it is, but let's not take it to, I don't know, $15 an hour or $20 an hour or $50 an hour, whatever. Well, why not oppose the idea that the government is going to mandate wage and price controls? They won't attack the fundamental ideas. They'll just try to keep things exactly the way they are. That's why conservatives keep losing. They act as a ratchet preserving the change.
recent reports from Venezuela are stating that they can't even supply water to their citizens. So they had an oil production that was making Venezuela at one time very prosperous, and they totally mismanaged it and started controlling price on goods and the supply of goods. And so before you knew it, there was nothing on the shelves down there. The people are starving to death. They're leaving, and they're trying to get water now. So Venezuela has been a very, very bad example of socialism, communism that doesn't work. But getting back to some of these culture war or Marxist culture or the cultural Marxism, I guess, is what some have labeled what's going on right now in this country. It's a culture war. You have to get back to Antonio Gramsci, who was one of the founders of the Italian, okay, Communist Party. And when you begin to go back in time and start seeing some of these people and what they were all about, this was late 1800s into 1937, but it was in, he had created the Italian Party of Italy. He was a founder of that, Antonio Gramsci, G-R-A-M-S-C-I. But in Marxist philosophy, cultural hegemony is the domination of a culturally diverse society by the ruling class who manipulate the culture of that society. Now, at the time that Antonio Gramsci was exerting his influence in Italy within the Communist Party before he was deposed by Mussolini and fascism, he was had a debate going with Stalin at the time. And his idea was to spread communism worldwide, we must attack the Western culture. So his idea was to take over the West with communism. You had to attack the culture. You had to attack the political system, the economic system, and the religious system of the West to make inroads and to take over the West. And so this is what we're talking about on this level right now, is that we've had a tremendous number of decades coming out of the Fabian Society in England in the 1880s, and then there was the American Fabian Society of Socialists, and then also the Progressivism movement in the early 1900s. But also we had in the early 1900s a socialist communist, you could say, sympathetic group with the Bolsheviks that were taking over Russia at the time. There was help granted to that movement by Woodrow Wilson by giving passports to Leon Trotsky and his fellow comrades who got on a boat. Leon Trotsky in 1917 was in New York City setting up communist cells in New York City. He got the call from Stalin and Lenin to come join them in St. Petersburg and let's start the revolution against the Tsar. The Tsarist government. And so he got on a freighter from New York and was sailing over to Finland at the time. And eventually he was stopped off the coast, Nova Scotia. The Canadian officials said, we got a very suspicious man here. They communicated with London, Washington, D.C. Both capitals said, don't interfere and let him proceed. He finally got to Finland, went into St. Petersburg, which at the time was the capital of Russia, and started fomenting revolution that became very, very successful. Now, the West, this revolution was financed by Western bankers, London-based and New York-based, and some German bankers, too, at the time, because they wanted to interfere with the war that was ongoing between Russia and Germany and the Allies, but also they wanted to stunt the growth of the Tsarist revolution, the Industrial Revolution, that Tsarist Nicholas II was fomenting and putting together. Russia was beginning to be an industrial, giant and in competition with the Western industrial base that was developing at the time. And so this fomenting of this revolution, led by Lenin, Stalin, and Trotsky, would undermine the viability of that industrial revolution occurring in Russia. Also, it was reported they stole some gold out of there too, out of the Russian treasury, to pay for this financing that occurred earlier. So the Western interests financed the Bolshevik Revolution. They went in there, and Trotsky and them were overwhelmingly successful. Then they started turning their view to America and the West. How can we bring, you know, the Western Europeans and America under the Soviet or the communist influence? And Antonio Gramsci's idea of attacking the culture of the West has been ongoing since then, since the early 20s, late 20s and onward, for a good, I would say, my gosh, about 100 years. So they've had about 100 years, 10 decades of annihilating and destroying this country's cultural base. And let me tell you some of the things that they utilized to do that. And what they did was they started undermining our documents, our founding fathers' principles and their founding documents. They would come in and they would say the U.S. Constitution, these were done by intellectuals who had Marxist communist alliances and sympathies, okay, that were working in our universities at the time. So they would come in with papers, white papers, and they would say such things as, our U.S. Constitution is old and archaic, and it should change with the times. And our culture is evolving and so forth. And that old U.S. Constitution is no good. And really, it should be a living, breathing instrument. We could bring it alive with changes that it should make. See? And with those changes, then meant that once they made it a living, breathing document, then they could kill it off with the changes that they wanted. And that's basically some of the approaches that they had, was to put forward people like Thomas Jefferson as a slaveholder. He wasn't any good, and we're going to diss him and don't listen to him. But one of the things that Jefferson said was that banks are more dangerous to our nation than standing armies. So when they started dissing these intellectual conspirators, revolutionaries, Russian Marxist communist revolutionaries in many of our colleges and universities, they started putting out the idea that Jefferson was a slaveholder, probably had children with some of these slave women, and that he wasn't any good, don't listen to him. So they started not listening to Jefferson, who gave us warnings about the bank and the money powers. Now, behind the scenes, the money and the banking power, the money powers, were actually manipulating the controlled opposition to capitalism. They were controlling and manipulating the Fabian Society, which eventually established the London School of Economics and Political Science in London. And then they started creating a United States Fabian Society. They come across later in 22 with the Council of Foreign Relations. They had a corresponding sister unit there, the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London, and then they started undermining our culture in many ways with all kinds of different, you could say, dynamics. But what has happened here in the last decades is that the corporations that were founded and grown from the American system of free enterprise and so forth began to be monopolistic in their practices. So instead of practicing a free market type of enterprise, they started becoming monopolistic. Thus, they wanted to shut down other competitors, and thus they became what some people would label them now as crony capitalists, okay? And when you say crony capitalist, you're talking about these people in the early 1900s, these corporate interests early on, mainly banking interests, went in, Warburg and J.P. Morgan and the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers went in and took control of our money creation system, which was the Federal Reserve, see. And taking over that Federal Reserve and establishing it and placing the power of money creation in their own hands then gave them power, ultimate power, to regulate and to finance whoever they wanted that supported their views. Now, in addition, what they've been behind the world communist movement for is to establish world communism for the lower classes. Thus, the lower classes could be more easily manipulated and controlled through a system of world communism versus they didn't want democratic republic. They didn't want individual freedoms and rights that would question government because they own government with the money that they had. So you could say it's a public-private partnership that has developed that resembles very closely to the systems that originated in Italy and Germany under those fascist regimes there, where you had a partnership between the government and the corporations. And that's basically what has evolved into this country now, is a partnership between the giant corporations worldwide, the globalist corporations, and our government, say. And they've also extended that into China. Perhaps right now they're changing their mind about China, because China, which they built up originally, has become overwhelmingly in a dominant position and wants to take them out. So my idea lately is those very money powers that built up China have changed their mind a little bit and view China more as an enemy, a looming future enemy, than a collaborator, even though they helped build them up originally. Now, they like the Chinese model, see, of the social engineering and the society being engineered and controlled like the Chinese are continuing to do. But so they're looking at that for the rest of the world system and the new world order and a world, you could say, government, basically what they're envisioning to be, somewhat like the Chinese model. So there's debate going on within the high circles of the world's elitist about what to do with China, because China now is becoming dominant. It's going to take their own interest out. China has taken and stolen many of their patents, many of their trademarks, and many of their, you could say, secrets, business secrets and procedures and techniques and formulas, you could say, and very closely guarded things in plastics and things like this. And China is becoming more and more dominant every day. So this is the real danger in the future. And I believe that some of the world money's powers that can still control through their banking interests primarily and industrial interests control the West and Western money power. And they can still take China down and keep them down. And I believe this is the same power that gave China opium in the 1700s and then came back and gave them communism in 1949, and I believe the latest thing they gave China, and this is a conjecture, is the virus. I believe they gave them the virus to bring them down, to call a halt somewhat to their expansionary programs, and to keep them from becoming world dominant sooner than later. See, not sooner, maybe later, but they wanted to stave off and delay that inevitability, you could say. So right now we're undergoing with this this George Floyd. I must say this before we end this hour, is that what happened in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, was a perfect storm that created. It was the most evil, insidious act that could have been gifted to the revolutionaries operating out of Minnesota and the University of Minnesota and so forth, and operating out of Minneapolis. So this ideal perfect transgression by the authorities, and what it did was it created a hate, a trauma-based hate and resentment at a very deep psychological level, at our deep psyche level. And what that did was create an intense hatred and resentment for those people, those authorities that had promulgated the death of George Floyd. And what that has done is set off a hell of a firestorm, and within the very, you could say, community that has led the communist, Marxist, communist cultural revolution out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Okay, the school there from 1948 onward was a Farmers Labor Alliance Party out of Minnesota. It was dominated early on by Humphrey, Hubert Humphrey, and later gave way and had been converted into a collectivist left communist socialist dominance at this time. And the University of Minnesota has been a cauldron, you could say, of the conditioning, schooling, and teachings of those very, very collective left ideals, see. So when you had an area there, and you had this area that was exposed to this heinous crime promulgated by the policeman. Now, I agree that it was heinous, and I certainly, you know, criticize what happened there. I'm on the black side on that. And they have undergone a lot of problems in the past. So I'm in sympathy with the blacks on rising up in protest against what happened. I just think now with the Black Lives Matters under the influence of a Marxist communist types of the founding members could possibly have been indoctrinated early on in a communist, ideology. And now they're sort of acting out, from the left, what the controllers want. Now, the controllers are control opposition by the ultra money. So the ultra capitalists are actually through a foundation such as the Tides Foundation and other organizations. They're funding many of the organizations on the lower level that are taking this Black Lives Matters initiative and movement and expanding that for political power. So that's basically what we have, that's unfolding right now. And, the polls, even some of the polls, what they've done, as far as within, the white community and the white population is they're saying also to the white population and many of the white population that have been schooled, at our colleges and universities have been exposed to this collectivist thought. So they've already pre-programmed some of those, and also they've been, you could say, exposed for sure from K to 12 into an environmental, a green dynamic. A green, you could say, revolution is underway. And so what you see now is you say the World Economic Forum, starting next January 2021, is putting together their forum together with a green movement, okay? So that's very ominous in the fact that they're going to take advantage of all of these millions into the billions of people that have been indoctrinated into the green movement, the environmental movement, and they're going to mate that up with their World Economic Forum. That is much more corporate fascist model than it is anything. But the green movement will be brought, will be used to overwhelm the lower classes and bringing them into a world communist movement with a world government, see, over that. And the UN is cooperating with this. There are people that are sitting on the human rights commissions at the UN in Geneva that are teaching law in Minneapolis, University of Minnesota. And it's all a gigantic, system that's unfolding now. And I believe it's one of the most dangerous uprisings that we've ever seen in this country. And that's why Trump, G. Edward Griffin earlier was interviewed by Alex Jones. And G. Edward Griffin is one of the finest men around. And he said he hears Trump say things, okay? Like, yeah, they're treasonous us and this and that. But he doesn't see any action coming out of that, see? So what I'm beginning to see is that have they surrounded Trump so much, and I believe they have in the past, with people like John Bolton and others that have stymied his actions. He accomplished a great number of things, even though he had people around him that were frustrating and sabotaging some of his initiatives. He still accomplished a lot. But right now, Is he holding back and taking actions that could stop this revolt? And it's a rebellion. Actually, I would describe what's going on in America right now as a rebellion. And it seems like he's beginning to want to leave it to the governors and to the mayors and not step in to quell some of this rebelliousness from on a federal level. Because I think he's playing the game that he's going to let them stew in their own juices by their own mistakes. And I think that Capitol Hill thing, that chop in Seattle, perhaps is one that backfired on them now because they're beginning to see that the people that live there want law and order. And how do you do that but without, you know, police out there? Now, the police, they have bad apples in there, and they have had some policemen that have done some very horrible things to people over the years, see. And so I don't, of course, sanction that, and I stand with the black community in against that, see. And I sympathize with them, and I understand what has happened in the past. But what we're seeing now is the black community, along with Black Lives Matters and many others, and these communist revolutionaries, are placing on the white population a white, you could say, guilt. That what they're doing is they're playing the whites into having this guilt for past transgressions that, say, white slavers had against the white black slaves. And so they're trying to put this guilt, and it's working right now. So many of these black revolutionaries, along with all these different revolutionary groups that are being funded by Tides Foundation, by ways of other foundations, like there's an Alliance Global Justice Organization in Tucson that is also funding. You ought to go in there and look at their 990s, which is a form that lays out who they actually fund, and they're funding one group that is an umbrella organization. Well, it's a black group out of Chicago that is an umbrella organization for 150 other black groups. So this thing is not small, and it's being funded by the corporate, you could say, corporate fascists who are controlling the left up to a point, and they're continuing to control that to create chaos and to bring America and to transform America into a communist state. That's it right now, and it seems to be working to some degree. So, good Americans out there, all I can suggest you do, we're down to about the last minute or so of our program tonight, is I would say we've got to reach out, reach across the aisle. The conservatives need to get together with the liberals and with some of these other elements, and we've got to talk to them about who is actually controlling them, see, and get them to awaken to the real system and the real, you could say, money powers, okay, that are behind the control system. Now, these people on the left that are revolting against against capitalism, we've got to make it clear that it's crony capitalism that had the problem. So that privately held Fed has been the problem. They need to join in with us and to reform our financial system so that their money in the future will be more honest and be more forthcoming for their own minority projects and their own minority businesses. See, before we had crony capitalism, we still have it, that did favor some of the insiders, see, and did not give the blacks and other minority groups, did not give them the financing at times that they need it. So I understand some of this, the protest movement here that's underway. And I'm in sympathy with some of the elements of that. But in tearing down and burning down these minority-based businesses is not the way to go. You're actually destroying the very base upon which others can begin to get ahead in this economy. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and I hope I wasn't too long-winded and drawn out, but I just had to say a few important things there that I believe that we can try to awaken our souls and our American citizens. Thank you, and good night.